Gather round, everyone. Turn out the lights. You might want to grab a flashlight or two. Sit close to whoever's next to you, but not too close. You never know if they might turn into a zombie.
All right. Hello, and welcome to a very special Double Dude episode of the Stasis Pod. I'm Rob.
And I'm Double David. It has been a while. It's been more than a year since we've done one of these filler things.
It has been some time, yes.
Scheduling and things. I've been meaning to get us to do one, like to have a extra episode laying around in case we miss a week, and we missed a week a few times.
Yes.
It just hasn't lined up.
Mm-hmm.
But since we missed this past weekend because of Canadian Thanksgiving, which is actually this weekend, not last weekend, but you were celebrating it a week early? Yeah, okay.
There were scheduling issues.
Okay, as happens more and more.
Yeah. So yeah, we have been brought together today by the via the miracle of old weird stuff resurfacing on streaming.
Old weird thing that you found that I'd only vaguely heard of. I'd heard of the story. I'd never really known about the movie version.
Ah, yes, because by the pricking of my thumbs, Something Wicked This Way Comes, which is what we watched today. This is the 1983 adaptation of the Ray Bradbury novel, directed by Jack...
From the 60s or something?
It is from... But 1962, yes.
Yeah, there you go.
And yeah, directed by Jack Clayton, who was a big, never really like a huge director, but he had some well-regarded movies.
Oh yeah, didn't he have like two famous things before this or something?
But he did The Innocents, which was like sort of a big, it's a Henry James adaptation, also sort of a horror movie. It's got Deborah Carr, and he did the 1970s version of The Great Gatsby with Robert Redford and Mia Farrow.
Oh, maybe that's what I was thinking of.
And then I think after Gatsby, he had like a really bad stroke, and then he didn't work for like almost a decade.
Oh.
And then he did this, and this was... And this came at a strange time for Disney, so...
Yeah.
Like by the 80s, like
It is weird that this is a Disney movie.
It is weird. Like, by the 80s, so Walt died in 66, and pretty much everything that he'd been working on when he died had sort of petered out by the 70s. And the company was just going through a real weird time. The animated movies just weren't hitting the way they used to. And they were sort of trying to move into like more adult live-action movies.
Yes.
Like this is around the time you hit the... Well, in fact, this is the year after Tron came out.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that makes sense.
So they were sort of going for that action-y kind of like boys adventure thing, which they did very successfully in like the 50s with like 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea and such.
Odd Tron connection. This was almost like one of the next movies after that to have CG in it.
Yes, but I guess they thought it didn't look good enough, so they did not release it.
Deleted that scene.
Yes.
And, well, also, where I think it would have come in the movie, I think it would have been too much weird magical nonsense early in the movie.
Yeah, I mean, this worked. This movie had real problems behind the scenes.
Yes.
And they've been trying to adapt it for like 20 years. Like, Kirk Douglas had the rights at one point.
Yeah, I was looking up some of the behind the scenes, and Kirk Douglas was like a friend of Ray Bradbury or something?
And Bradbury actually wrote the script for this too. Although I think it went through some rewrites that he wasn't happy with.
Yeah. Oh no! Wait, I was Gene Kelly was his friend.
Oh, Gene Kelly also wanted to make it.
Yeah, which is long ago, like before the book was actually written. It was a script.
Mm-hmm.
It's troubled production from the jump.
It's always been a little difficult to adapt Bradbury.
Yes. Well, wasn't there adaptations of some of the Martian Chronicles stuff?
Yeah, there was a TV series. I think that's reasonably well regarded. And I haven't seen it.
Yeah, I've seen a few episodes of that, and that was good.
The Fahrenheit 451, that they've adapted it several times. They've never quite got it, I don't think.
They've done more than one?
Oh, yeah. There was one just a couple of years ago. I think maybe it was a miniseries.
Oh, okay. That may be why I didn't know about it.
But, I mean, the one from the Truffaut one from the 60s is the big one. And then there was the Illustrated Man, which didn't quite work. And there's an animated adaptation of The Halloween Tree that I think is pretty good. Although I haven't seen it in 30 years.
Maybe I'm thinking of it. Wasn't there an animated of one of his sci-fi stories? Or am I thinking of something else?
Nothing springs to mind offhand, but it's entirely possible.
Or maybe it was just something that was similar to the Halloween one. Yeah. Have I seen that? I don't remember.
It came out the early 90s, I want to say.
But yeah, like Bradbury, I think I've read a couple of his short stories, like what's the Lighthouse one? Or Foghorn?
Oh yeah, the Foghorn, which they then adapted as, what is it, the Beast from 20,000, or from 10,000 Fathoms, or something like that?
Yes, which became Godzilla and many other things. Mm-hmm. Like, but that's short and punchy and perfect.
Yes.
I think I've read a couple of, the Veldt.
Oh yeah.
That's his, right?
That's his.
Yeah. That's fucking amazing. But like, yeah, his writing is great as writing. It doesn't seem to translate well to live-action story. Mm-hmm. Like, there's just something about, like, how good he is with words does not work on the screen. Mm-hmm.
And I will say, this movie, I think, gets the tone pretty good.
Yeah.
Like it's really got that sort of, like...
This gets the tone so well that I feel like Stephen King stole everything from this movie.
Well, Stephen King basically remade this as Needful Things.
Yeah, like watching this, like it's very much Needful. This is a mostly better version of Needful Things.
Although Jonathan Pryce versus what's his name? Swedish guy from the movie.
Shit. I've seen the movie. I'm trying to remember. Oh, what the fuck is his name? Is it Max von Sydow?
It is Max von Sydow. Max von Sydow.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. The guy they got in is good. It's just that we'll get to it.
Yeah, well, actually, although he was not the first choice, it was another budget issue where they wanted...
Yeah, they wanted, like, Christopher Lee. Somebody, yeah.
But they ended up going with a then... basically unknown Jonathan Pryce, who's really good in this, actually.
He's fantastic. But
yeah.
Forget about the The problem with him is like that his character, Mr. Dark, isn't really magical monstrous enough. He's just a guy with moving tattoos.
Yes.
Which, like, that's one thing where Needful Things is better. It's like, it's a freaking devil come to town, basically.
Well, I mean, they sort of explain his deal.
Kind of, but...
Anyway, so, yeah, we are in Greentown, Illinois. It's a very sort of idyllic, I mean, this presumably takes place in, like, the early 80s, sort of, maybe?
No, it's 50s or 60s.
Okay, I wasn't sure if it was just like nothing's changed since the 50s, but no, I think you're right. It is. Well,
it's very much like I was figuring, oh, it was going to take place when the movie was filmed.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very much like, oh, this is 50s. This is ancient. This is that time that every Stephen King story is nostalgic about.
Although it's interesting because I guess that's like Stephen King's childhood, but that would be like, sort of this because it's sort of the 50s and it's also sort of like the 20s/30s.
It would have been Bradbury's childhood. Yeah, because it's told in flashback, but we never flash forward to the present.
I guess because that was a last minute change.
Yeah, the narrator was added on. The narration is minimal. I don't mind it.
Yes.
Then again, I'm a guy who grew up with the Blade Runner with all the narration.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it is too much in Blade Runner, but I like that because it plays into the noir setting.
Mm-hmm.
Or noir, attempted noir, because it's cyberpunk and not this, but
And so we're mostly dealing with two boys. You got Will Holloway, who's a good kid, and you got Jim, the awesomely named Jim Nightshade, who is
kind
of a bad boy.
He should be trying to track down ghosts and vampires and shit.
I mean, even maybe Mr. Dark at the end sort of just wants him around just because his name would look really cool on the marquee. Because
his name sounds cool, yeah.
And they were born a minute apart on Halloween.
Oh, I caught that, because they go on in their introduction about, oh, I'm a minute older and nonsense. I didn't catch that it was on Halloween. That
yes.
It's kind of even crazier. I feel like that should have been shouted louder throughout the movie.
It's a pretty quiet movie, generally.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's subtle.
Yeah.
Often to its detriment.
Yeah, so Will lives with his parents, and his dad is Jason Robards, maybe at the time the biggest star in the movie.
And I think it may... Well,
he's a guy who was in
the only everything. One, really.
Well, I mean Diane Ladd, who plays Mrs. Nightshade, she was, she was an Oscar nominee at this point for Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore. And, of course, also the mother of Laura Dern.
I just know, Robard is such a weird cast, because Will's dad is supposed to be, he's an older father, he's tired, he's got heart problems. But the problem with Captain Sting Robard is he's in his 60s in this movie.
He's just about 60 in this movie.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think that's unheard of.
No, it feels like he's older than the story calls for.
I mean, Robard is kind of one of those guys who always seemed old, and...
Yes, he's always had gray hair, I guess.
Yeah.
He's great, it just feels like they cast a guy 10 years too old for the character. Yeah.
And then, coming into town is this carnival, and also a traveling lightning rod salesman.
Oh yeah, the lightning rod salesman who feels like that crazy guy out of a lot of Stephen King books, but at the same time it feels like he could be Thor walking the earth or something.
Yeah, I kind of thought this guy was also supposed to be some sort of supernatural entity.
Yes, because he comes into town like prophetic. Something bad's going to happen to your house. You need a lightning rod to protect you. But then he's just this itinerant lunatic.
And this is Royal Dano, who was probably most famous for playing Lincoln a bunch of times.
Was? I think I've seen him in things playing a crazy cowboy.
I mean, he was definitely in a lot of westerns, but I guess his big association with Disney is that he's the voice of the robot Lincoln at the Hall of Presidents.
Ah.
And I believe still is, even though he's long dead.
Hmm. Well, so is Lincoln, so it works.
Yeah. And yeah, so this carnival comes to town, and it is indeed led by Mr. Dark, played by a then unknown Jonathan Pryce, who I think is fantastic in this movie.
Yeah. We don't see Mr. Dark for half the movie, though, which is amazing. Because the carnival itself, rolls into town, and it seems like it's haunted. The ropes from the tents are giant spider webs. It's a nice setup. Mm-hmm. Of this creepy thing, and then they go there the next day when it's open, and it just seems it's a normal carnival. But it's still a little weird.
Yes.
And then halfway through the kids exploring it, they sneak into a tent and find Mr. Dark, and the movie gets darker.
Yeah, and it, creepy carnival. It's got a creepy, hall of mirrors, it's got a spooky carousel.
Yeah, it's got a bunch of... Haunted carnival is such a great idea because a carnival already feels sketchy because it's carny folk and weird shit going on and the freaks in the carnival. The potential for oddness at a carnival is fantastic, but this is a cursed evil carnival that swallows souls.
Yes.
It's great.
And so, various people from various townspeople sort of get their wishes here.
Yeah, there's three main ones.
Yeah, there's the bartender who lost an arm and a leg. And then there's the teacher who regains her youth. And then who's the third one again?
There's the barber and the... I don't know what he did. The guy with the cigarette shop.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And they sort of, I like the... And they sort of also get sort of ensorcelled into this.
Yeah, they get sort of ironic punishments. The barber keeps talking about foreign ladies, but he's never left town.
Yeah.
So he gets stuck into a dancing tent, and his clothes get ripped off, and then he disappears.
It's
weird. And the smoke shop guy is obsessed with winning the lottery and chance and shit, and does win $1,000, goes up on a Ferris wheel, and disappears.
Yes.
Oh, and a character, well, there are minor characters in the carnival. Well, there's Mr. Cougar, who's like a strong man, big guy with red hair. He keeps coming back. He's like the number two, kind of Mr. Dark. There's a couple of little people who I expected to be bigger parts of the movie.
Yeah, I mean, they didn't cast,
never
like,
quite these, were.
They aren't like...
One of them is,
One of them is Angelo Rosita, who's Master in Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome.
Yes. Yeah, I expected him to be like the number three kind of, but he's only in like a few scenes.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's, slowly creeping through the movie, the woman who's like the Dust Witch, I think, or something like that.
Yeah, I think she's supposed to be like this ancient hag in the book, but not in this because she's Pam Grier.
Yeah, like what the... Like, because when we first see her, is she the one in the, like, the frozen ice box thing?
Yes.
Okay. Because we keep seeing this woman with, like, a red ring on her finger. And then, like, when there's the harem tent, like, every woman in there has got a red ring. It's like, are there multiples of her? Whatever's going on? But we see her more and more, but she's usually veiled and robed. So we don't get a good look at her. She only has a few lines. And it's like, not until near the end of the movie, I realize... Is that fucking Pam Grier? What the fuck?
It's a weird time for Pam Grier because it's post blaxploitation, but pre Jackie Brown.
Yeah, it's a weird time. It's like she's just in this movie, and it feels like, what? How are you here? I mean, you're getting Disney money, but what?
Yeah. I mean, I guess they apparently just really wanted her in the movie, and you know, she is eerie. Does she actually have any lines? She has a couple, I think.
She has lines earlier because she's the fortune teller.
Oh, right, right.
And
yes.
That's where most of her dialogue is near the beginning when she's got the veil on. I didn't realize who the fuck it was.
Mm-hmm.
And then she has a few lines near the end, which I think is just mostly magical incantations.
Yeah.
So she might as well be mute throughout the movie.
Huh?
But there she is.
So you know, the boys start to figure out that something's going on here. Like, the teacher does indeed become young, but she also goes blind.
Yes, because ironic punishments. Like Needful Things. Needful Things, I think, sort of does this better in that, like, in this, like, oh, you're given these gifts, these wishes you wanted, but they have an ironic punishment. Like, oh, you get young, but you go blind and stuff. But it's not, doesn't really play with that that well. Needful Things does it sort of better in that, oh, you can have this thing you wish for if you do me a favor.
Right.
Which is basically fucking with somebody else in the town to cause more chaos. Like, that's, I think, the one part where Stephen King does this exact story better.
Mm-hmm.
But the rest of it's like, he's got one guy who may be Satan running a pawn shop as opposed to Cursed Carnival.
Yes. So they get into this carnival and they see that he has captured Tom Fury, the lightning rod salesman, and he wants to know about this this oncoming storm.
Can you feel the storm? It's coming. Like, yeah, that was another part where it felt like, have you captured Thor? What is going on?
Like, how it does this seem that he's
guy who's
not
just selling lightning rods, like. Like, at the beginning, he was, like, oh, conning people, but in a fun way. It's like, oh, you need to buy this lightning rod to protect your house. But here, it's like, Mr. Dark's like, you know shit. You're psychic or some shit. Tell me. But he seems less impressive. He's just this guy.
Now, I will
note...
Like,
I don't know when the thunder's coming. What the fuck?
That there is a... there is sort of a real-life inspiration for Bradbury here.
Hmm.
So when Bradbury was a kid, he went to a carnival.
As you
and do. there was a magician, Mr. Electrico.
That's a horrible name.
Who did like tricks with electricity. He had a Tesla coil and whatever.
Jacob's ladders and nonsense.
Yeah, and then he had like an electric sword, and he tapped Bradbury on both shoulders, and then told him to live forever.
Sure.
And then apparently Bradbury said that, we've met before. You were my best friend in France in 1918, and you died in my arms in the Battle of Ardennes Forest that year. And here you are, born again in a new body with a new name. Welcome back.
That's crazy.
That is crazy.
Nonsense, someone will say, just to confuse a small child, which ends up inspiring him.
Basically. So that is presumably the inspiration for Tom Fury here.
Hmm.
And so the boys escape, and so they're then besieged in the night by tarantulas, played by actual tarantulas.
Yeah, like so many tarantulas. Like I feared for the tarantulas.
Apparently, act 200 real tarantulas.
Like. Two children panicking in a room filled with hundreds of tarantulas.
Apparently it was very unpleasant because they, like, got the... They, like, shot the hairs at them, the tarantulas.
Well, yeah, because that many spiders, like, the hairs are itchy yeah. as fuck.
But apparently it was supposed to be, like a big hand that grabbed them. But they couldn't get the big hand to work.
Yeah, a big physical prop hand that sounds, like, good on paper, but... didn't work. I mean, not that the spiders were... Okay, here's the thing with the movie. I didn't know this movie existed. Apparently it was mythic. That it was, like, never seen and not quite media.
No, I mean, it was released on, like, Blu-ray, on DVD, like, 15 years ago. But,
yeah.
And it was, you know, came out on VHS when it first came out. But it didn't make a lot of money in the theater. And Disney, you know, it's a real black sheep of the Disney family.
Yeah.
But just this year, it came on streaming for the very first time on Disney Plus, and it looks like they cleaned it up pretty well. It's a nice looking print.
Yeah, the print's pretty good. So they've kept it. They didn't do anything wrong with it. They just didn't show it. It's not scary, is the thing.
It's eerie, I guess. Yes.
Like, I imagine if I'd seen this when I was the age of the two kids in the movie, I probably would have loved it.
Yeah.
But looking at it now, it's like. It's an interesting story
mm-hmm.
that's fumbled in a few spots, but it's never really scary. I mean, the closest you get is, oh, if you have arachnophobia, this scene is terrifying.
Well, there is that.
Whereas I just like, oh, look at all the spiders. They're cute.
But luckily they are, they're saved by this lightning rod.
Yes, because it was just a dream.
Mm-hmm. And then in the...
Oh, yeah, because the spiders are sent there by Pam Grier, who turns into a green cloud of dust that becomes the spiders or something. Like, weird magic shit goes on. That isn't explained. It's probably for the best.
Apparently she's the dust witch.
Yes, Pam Grier is the most magical part of this movie. Well, and the Ferris wheel.
Yes.
Or, the carousel.
Carousel. Yeah, it's a creepy carousel.
Yes. Yes, but more in concept. Like, looking at it, like, oh, it spins backwards and you get younger. It spins forwards. You get older.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, it's done in a weird slow-mo effect that kind of just gave me a headache.
Yeah.
Like it just spins, skips frames, and blurs. It's like, ow.
So anyway, this carnival goes on parade looking for the boys, and we get a
yeah.
Mr. Dark comes to see Charles, Will's father, and he's looking for the boys, and he's got their faces tattooed on his palms, which was directly referenced by an episode of the Venture Brothers, which I only now realize.
Oh, yes. Wow. Oh.
He even uses the word toe-headed.
Well, that's just a word I'd already known because I'm blonde and it would come up very rarely. Like, it's a word very old people would use.
So Charles is able to figure out that things are going on, and he goes to the library and he's reading up about, and he realizes that this carnival has been there before.
Yeah, again, Stephen King, like, this is it. But, like, yes, his Will's father's father, grandfather, wrote down in his diary about the last time this carnival came to town. Does it also mention Mr. Dark in that?
I think so,
Or is it
yes.
just the carnival
I
itself?
think it is because he talks about, how he knows who you are. You are the autumn people. Where do you come from? The dust. Where do you go to? The grave.
Yeah,
So the.
that makes Mr. Dark seem more mysterious and magical than he actually is, because he's just a guy with living tattoos.
Well, and I think that's where the Price casting really works. I mean,
Yeah, yes,
not just because he's good, but
he
like,
oversells it. He's fantastic as
yeah.
Mr.
Well,
Dark.
but I mean, a lot of the choices were like older men, and I think it works well that he's considerably younger than Jason Robards here,
Yeah, that
even though
works.
chronologically he could be thousands of years old, but he remains young. Well,
Well, I guess
the
he is that old
virtuous
because of the Ferris wheel. They
get
keep
old.
rewinding themselves. Okay, that does kind of work. It's just this movie needs a rewrite or something. Well, this movie had multiple rewrites because
Yes, it did. That might be the problem.
the original was by Bradbury, then it was filmed, and then it was re-edited, and it's bumpy.
And so the confrontation they have is really good.
Yes, especially like because Mr. Dark has basically the upper hand through the whole thing, because like he already knew the kids' names, and Charles was trying to lie to him, and the part where like, oh, you have an old heart, I could make you young again, I could take years off of you, and then takes the diary he was reading and just starts ripping pages out. I could turn you to 30, 31, 32, and he's bargaining with him in this weird, creepy way. It's like, oh, he sells that scene really well. That's probably the best scene in the movie. And it's just a guy counting down, mostly. Or counting up.
And so he gets out of there, but Mr. Dark takes the boys back to the carnival. He's going to make Jim Nightshade his apprentice because it sounds so good on the marquee.
Yes. And
No.
Will's also there.
He's also there.
Yeah, I feel like Will should have had a more ironic name too. It could have played into something, but it's just Will Holloway. Oh, a Halloween, that's the closest you got.
Oh,
You don't
maybe.
even play off that as much.
No. And then also Diane Ladd is there, and she's sort of been convinced that like Jim's long lost father is coming back, but Jason Robards is like, no, he's not coming back. You got to get out of here. So he braves this Hall of Mirrors, and Will sort of overcomes the ensorcelment and gets rid of the death, which we'll briefly see what I guess is her true face, which is sort of more gruesome and less Pam Grier.
Yeah, she's got sort of like skull paint on, kind of.
Yeah. And then she just gets straight up impaled with this lightning rod.
Yes, and turns to green dust and blows away.
Yes.
Which to me is like, well, she's not dead. She's coming back next autumn.
Yeah.
Or 100 autumns from now.
And so they find Mr. Dark on the carousel, and they get Jim off there, and lightning hits the ride just as this oncoming storm. And then Mr. Dark starts going all chose the wrong grail.
Yeah, which sort of goes on too long.
I mean, it's not as cool as basically the same thing from the end of Last Crusade, which is a couple years later, and they had ILM working on it.
Yeah, and because I think they just cut away to it too much, and he's just on the ride too long, and when it should have been a lot quicker. Well, and my brain just goes to, oh, best life-sucking effects are in Life Force.
Ooh, I guess that is a couple years later.
Yeah. Those zombies look better. This is also because like he loses his facial hair as he ages, and the makeup is like, we are not going to be sticking gray hairs in this fake head. Like, we can't put the mustache on. He's just bald now.
Yeah.
So our villain just dies. The rest of the carnival gets sucked up into the sky, which, again, cool. It doesn't quite look as cool as it sounds, but conceptually it's great.
No, and I don't know if they actually rescue any of the other people. They might just be stuck in there.
Nope. Well, because they end up in the parade. They become part of the carnival.
Yeah.
Which, again, great creepy idea. Works better than needful things.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the people of the town become part of the darkness, as it were.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to just being murdered in needful things.
Yes.
So Charles and the two boys run back to town because he has the spirit of life back in him because his son loves him, and the end, kind of. The movie just kind of stops after Mr. Dark dies. There should be more of a wrap-up, like a little bit more of a scene, but it's just narration and running.
Yeah, I feel like they're... I mean, again, this
There's a little bit when they get into town and touch the barber pole, but that isn't enough.
Mm-hmm.
Because, again, like, that barber pole could have been more symbolic. Well, it's visually symbolic in one scene, because they have fun with the lights running up and down, but it's missing something. It's half of a good movie that could be a great movie.
Yes.
There's just some connective tissue it needs.
Yeah, I feel like this was like like another draft or another round of editing away from being like an all-timer.
Yeah.
I feel that actually a couple years later, Disney made Return to Oz, which I think is more successful than this.
Oh, that's the one with the Troll King?
That's one with the Troll King and like the Headless Lady.
Yeah.
Oh, the Wheelers.
Yeah. Oh, if this movie had done more shit like that, like, if it had done something weird in the Freak Show, like they had a Mermaid Man or something.
Yeah.
You could have done more shock value, especially with, like, the kids wandering around exploring the carnival and finding weird things. Like, if you had normal weird things, and then a carousel that ages people backwards.
And it's interesting, you can kind of get a look, if you watch the movie's original teaser, which is just, it's on YouTube, it is a straight-up horror movie.
Yeah, cause, like I said, this isn't really scary.
No, but this teaser is very disturbing. We'll have a link to it or something.
I forget if I saw
it. But it is upsetting.
Hmm. Yeah, either this needed to be more playfully kid-friendly, kind of, even when it goes into the dark stuff, or it needed to be more of a horror movie.
Yes. And as it is, it's kind of neither fish nor fowl.
Yeah. But again, like, this has DNA all over so many Stephen King things. Like, it's Needful Things, it's any Stephen King thing where it's a town and weird shit happens.
And there have been talks about remaking this. Not recently, but I feel like you could successfully remake this.
Yeah. I fear that somebody would like try to make a mini series out of this, and this is a rare case where I say, no, don't. Just make it a movie.
No, it's not that long a novel.
No, it's a very contained story. Not a lot really happens. You could add more things, yes, but you could just add that to a movie. Because this is like just barely over an hour and a half.
Yeah. 95 minutes.
Yeah, no, it's good. You could add some more spooky shit to make it 2 hours.
Yeah, but I do worry that you try to explain things, and I think it works better with things not being explained.
Yes. Like, I'd almost say you want to explain, like, the lightning rod dealer, but...
I think you may just got to play up a little more that he's not just some guy.
Yeah. Yeah, lean into the, wait, is he Thor?
Mm-hmm.
Weird. I'd maybe do more with the Dust Witch and the weird carnival henchman.
Yeah. But I will say I do thoroughly approve of Disney putting, like, weird stuff like this up on its streaming service.
Oh, yeah. Well, lately they've also been putting a lot of Hulu stuff. We're getting Aliens things.
Yeah.
I got to watch that with Alien Earth.
Oh, that's good.
Is that finished?
It's finished.
Okay, because I saw the Alien animated thing. That was great. Oh, I still need to watch Prey. Is that the one?
Oh, it's good. It's excellent, yes.
Okay. Because I saw the animated one, and that one was fun. Mm. Well, except for one weird thing at the end, but...
Yeah. But, yeah, I say open up the Disney vaults, Disney Plus.
Yes.
All right. So that should do us for this evening. But thank you for tuning in. And yeah, if you want to check this out for yourself, I'd say it's definitely worth watching at least once.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because I'd heard of it in reference to Needful Things. And, like, mostly just a story. I didn't realize, or if I'd heard about it, I forgot that this was a movie. Like, I just heard, oh, the story, something
with this. You didn't see this in the 80s or anything?
No. No. Okay. I don't know where this aired, but I missed it. Like, I remember a bunch of other things I've seen, like, what's the witches one? The Disney one with the...
Hocus Pocus?
Yes. Like, I'd seen that and a bunch of other things that were spooky and in this vein, but this, I completely missed.
Mm.
I guess because it didn't do the rounds of things like Goonies and like Monster Squad and whatever.
Yeah, this was a little before my time, so I never picked it up.
Hmm. But yeah, no, this is a great little Halloween horror thing that isn't really that scary.
No.
Unless you have arachnophobia.
All right, so until next time, I'm Rob.
I'm David, and we'll be doing Micronauts soon.
Or we'll have already done Micronauts. Who knows?
Yeah, well, yeah, I might save this. I don't know. Or have, I don't know. We'll figure it out when Eddie comes up. Good night.
Good night.